Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Urban America. This is Black Urban America. I am Kenny Jones, and welcome to another week where we're going to discuss issues. We're going to discuss solutions to an issue this evening. But first, I would just like to do a little housekeeping. Provocative Thoughts comes on Saturdays, 8 p.m. Provocative Thought is brought to you by Carl Sneed. And he discusses social issues in our communities. Also, returning on June 28th, Devin Heflin, and he discusses social media and media, black media images, and how media portray us on the screen and entertainment and what have you. Now, if you have a comment, just press one. Tonight, I have Miss Aisha Hardrick, if I said the last name right. And we're going to be discussing financial services in the black community. But before we go there, I just want to tell you that the marketing program is underway. And if you have a product or a service that you like to have exposed to the national community, we could have a marketing partnership program with We Talk Productions. And let me tell you, it will benefit your product and service. I have Jackie Holsky from Philadelphia, who's really working close with us in building this marketing program. And so therefore, let's take advantage of this. Everybody talk about, oh, we got to keep money in the community. We got to build our own business and everything. But We have to share. We have to expose what we do nationally in order to become productively. Ms. Hardrick, welcome to Black Urban America. How are you this evening?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. I've been wanting to vent or educate, let's just say that, for a long time. It's a problem, and we need to fix it.
Well, let me tell you something. Traditional media really doesn't discuss our issues or come up with solutions or have the people that have the solution, and they are doing the work. They are doing the work in these communities all over the country. I met people from Oakland, L.A., Houston, Cleveland, Arkansas, Maryland, New York, Florida, Georgia. I mean, there's people that they are doing things in their areas. And what I'm trying to do is build a national networking system or bank, as you would say.
So it's not that difficult. It's not that difficult, but it starts at home. And a lot of times we don't want to have these difficult conversations. I don't know if somehow in our minds we really think we're going to live forever. You know, we think if we don't have these conversations and we don't talk about where this is, why we need this, that's when everything, families literally fall apart. I had a client recently, actually talked to him today, where I've been talking to him about life insurance for the past 3 years, and he's been putting it off and laughing about it. And his sister passed away, and they didn't know if she had life insurance. They did, you know, and she has a child. So it's, first of all, it's all about conversations. We have to have these conversations because it's bad enough. You're going through stress that you lost a loved one. You lost a loved one, and now you have to focus your mind on if, where, why, how, and it's always, it always falls in one person's lap. We have to do better as a community to make sure that we break generational curses, point blank.
Generational curses, huh? Sound like you reached back for that one, generational curses, huh? Sound like Mr.
Solomon. Certain things we just don't want to talk about. And as parents, we have to do better for our children and make sure that, because one thing's for sure, you were born, there's only one option. And it's not a if, it's a when. When am I going to die? We can't schedule it. We can't put an appointment in on it. It's going to happen. It's, look at the times we're living in now. Us being brown, that's enough right there. We're just walking out the door, you can hear some psycho do something crazy. You know, but the main thing is having conversations and sitting down with a professional and having a real conversation. What is it that will make sure my family still functions and everybody can still live, eat, everything, go get educated, without it being a financial burden on one person? It's not that difficult. It's not. And if you do have life insurance in place and you set things up, make sure that person that is handling it for you, like your insurance agent, make sure at least once a year they review that with you to make sure that your needs, because things change from year to year. You may have rented when you first purchase that life insurance policy. Now you own a home. That financial need has changed. You may have not been a parent when you purchased that life insurance. Now you have two kids. There is a different need than what it was when you first got it. And I don't care where you get it, you make sure, one, that it provides for you, and that it's not putting you in a financial hardship, because what is the point of getting a life insurance policy if you can't afford to keep it? So that's what you want to do. When you want to sit down, you want to have real conversations with people. You want to make sure that that person's agenda is not about getting their quota taken care of. It's about making sure that you and your family will be taken care of properly.
Okay, let me say this. First, I just want to say to our listeners, if you have a comment or a question, just press one. Okay. Ms. Hatcher, could you just tell our audience, well, we got a lot of listeners tonight. Could you tell our audience something of your background? I mean, I know something about you, but our audience don't.
Yeah, I've been doing this for almost 20 years, and I keep it simple. When someone is talking to me, I want them to understand that it is not about me. Believe me, it is not about me. It is all about your family. I'm not going to waste your time. A lot of times, I'll tell a client to come in, and I'll tell them, don't bring your credit card or your checkbook with you, because it's about having a conversation and understanding what you need. That's me. That's how I function. But there's many people out there that make people a little nervous about insurance. It's not like it was back in the day where people literally put us in the same category as used car salesmen and things like, but no, it's not about that, because it is important. I know for me, for myself, and for the people that I work with, it is definitely, definitely about making sure that the family is stronger financially than they were prior to the death of a head of the house. You know, it could be the husband, the wife, it could be both. You know, you have to make sure that family is taken care of. I come from a strong family where we believed in life insurance on one side, and then maybe the other side, my other parent, didn't really think. So I literally know what it feels like to have that financial burden. And it's like, my God, how could this happen in my own family? And I sell it. I tell my family all the time, don't put yourself in a situation where we all are passing around a hat. How is that fair? Because if you think about it, especially those who have young children, if something happens to you, someone who wasn't really prepared financially has to pick up where you left off, whether it be grandmom, whether it be just one parent. You can take a small – insurance is not that expensive. It is really not, because you can get a small policy, $20, $30 a month, and to some people that may be a lot. You know, I'm realistic. But you have to think long term. What would you rather your family have if you leave? A sympathy card or a check for $100,000? You know, you have to think about insurance like that. And I've been doing this for, like I said, almost 20 years. So I know, I've seen it. I had to back away from work a lot of times and shed a tear, because it's just so frustrating when a family calls me and says, I want to know about their life. Well, they didn't want to keep it, or, you know, I offered it and they didn't want it. You know, it's heartbreaking sometimes. It is. It's heavy. And I try to retire a lot of times, but my clients won't let me. They won't let me.
Oh, you're not the retiring age, Ms. Hartrick. Stop. You got another 20 years. Let me ask you something, Ms. Hartrick.
Okay.
Why is it that, I know you went into a little bit, but are there Black-owned companies that deal with life insurances and other financial services in our communities? Maybe they just don't trust the parent company. You might be the agent, but maybe they don't trust the people that you represent. And, folks, press one if you have a comment or a question. Go ahead, Archie.
I live in the Baltimore area, and there's many Black-owned banks here. You do. I mean, Google tells you everything. You know, it's not going to lie. You have to research your area to see if you want something that's specifically Black-owned. Because, yeah, I work for a company where I'm an insurance agent for the company, but that's when you have to have somebody that is in the middle who is making sure that things are done right. And there's a lot of big companies that are not necessarily friendly to our community, but that's where – it's the same thing. Like, if you have a school that your child is in, and that school is not necessarily, you know – friendly to our culture. We're on top of that person. We're on top of that school. They know, don't play with my child. Don't play with my child's education. It's the same thing when you deal with these businesses. Who are you working with? Who is this person that is handling my insurance? Because if something happens, your house has to be paid off. Your car has to be paid off. You might have credit cards that need to be paid. Your child's tuition needs to be done. Those are the things that you want to make sure they care about. If they don't, there's thousands of insurance companies. So someone's Black-owned insurance company, everybody has a parent company. Let's just say that. It's always going to be
really?
A parent company involved. Say that again?
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's always, if you have an insurance agency, they may not own that particular company, they own that agency. So again, you have to research your area and determine, where do you want to invest your money? Who do you want to trust? So, but then if you're dealing with a company, a salesperson or an insurance agent that doesn't really care about you, and you know the company doesn't care about, why would you invest with them?
Well, how many Black Panther companies we do have in this country?
To be honest with you, I don't know that. I don't know the answer. I don't. The big companies are the ones that you see on TV, the commercials. I'm not trying to throw names out because this is not about the companies. This is about the issue. That's why I wanted to speak, because the companies, they're going to get their money. They're going to, regardless. But you have to, this program goes all over the country. So there's people everywhere. You have to research your area to see. And then it does take work. And again, the parent company, research that. Are they involved in companies that are organizations that don't fit your life? They don't fit what your standards are. And you don't deal with them no matter how big they are, you know? But one thing about life insurance, and you want to check the company that you invest with, or you get your life insurance, you get your IRAs, things like that. You want to check that company's financial standing. You want to see what their customer service is like. You want to see these things. How are they rated? And make sure that, again, they fit what you stand for. If they don't deal with them.
Well, how beneficial will it be for a group to have its own financial services?
Oh, my God. How beneficial? You mean that grows the community, that gives pride in your people? How could it not be beneficial? What would be the disadvantage of having something like that? I don't see a disadvantage. As long as it's honest and it works and it's helping you feel prideful, come on. That's the best. I wish that more investors would get together and do that. But again, I know in Maryland and Baltimore, there are a lot of Black-owned banks. And we did do a drive last year, but we wait until we get mad. We wait until we get mad about something, and then we want to start researching these things and trying to find how we can pull our money back because somebody doesn't have Kwanzaa cards. You can't find a Kwanzaa card in Target. Now you're mad, and you want to start something. No, don't wait until you're mad. You're not thinking rationally then. That
right.
is something nowadays we know we have to research everything because we'll be told the color blue is purple in a minute, and we're supposed to accept that. No, you have to research. You have to research everything, especially if it involves your money. And your family, come on. You can't just trust somebody. You have to research. Even if it is somebody you trust, still research. Still check them out. Is this best for me and my family? That's what it's always about.
So, getting back to the group group theory, what type of steps would it take for a group to start something like this?
If they're already in insurance and financial services, they will probably need their broker's license. And it's not that hard to open an agency, but still, again, you still have to deal with a parent company because you have to show that if, let's say you have, I don't know how many, 100,000 policies in your book. I'm thinking that's just small. You have to prove that if all of your clients have a claim and something catastrophic happens, you can afford to indemnify these people. Can you afford to take care of all of your clients and still keep your doors open? That's the main thing. That I don't want to deal with ABC Insurance because I would be concerned with, can you afford a catastrophic loss? If you can't, then that's a problem. So when that group gets together, they want to make sure that they have strong, solid investors. They want to make sure that they can prove solvency. You have to be able to prove that you can take care of these people. If you can't, then why open a business? But that would be the same thing with a mom and pop shop on the corner. You want to make sure that you can keep your doors open. So that would be the thing. It's not that hard. It's not hard at all. But still, it's very rare that you find a company that doesn't have a parent company, because, again, you need investors. You need to make sure that you have reinsurance. You want to make sure that you have insurance to cover you in the event that something happens. So it's not that difficult. It's not at all.
Can you define investment for us? I mean,
anytime
you throw that term out, but what is an investment? What is it?
And for me, if you're putting money into something, you're expecting a return on that. The good thing about life insurance is it is not something that is not going to pay off. It's eventually going to pay off, no matter how long you have it, and that's when the different types of life insurance comes into play. If you have a permanent policy like a whole life or a universal life policy, that grows cash value in it. So you're growing tax-free cash money in that policy that is going to grow over the years. That's your money, nothing but a term policy. It pretty much, if you get a 100,000 term policy, it doesn't grow unless you have, like, there are certain policies that eventually will pay you back, and they're normally return of premium policies. At the end of the term, you're still alive. You get all the money you put into it. But you have to make sure that you pick which one is best for your family. And a lot of times, people might have invest into a term policy and a permanent policy. This way you have one that you know, okay, this $300,000 is just sitting there, that's going to pay out $300,000, and the other one is growing cash value. So to me, an investor, you're putting something out because you're expecting a return. But again, the great thing about life insurance is not like you won't get a return on your investment. It's a when. When is this going to pay out? Because it's going to pay out.
Is life insurance only one part of financial services? Banking is another part. What's the other parts of financial services that we should be looking at as a community?
Retirement. Pay yourself first. Please pay yourself first.
Well, hold up.
What?
I gotta stop you for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for about 18 months, I've been talking about investment in your community, investment in your skills, investment in us, investment in our culture, economically, as well as social and culturally. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But everything you speak about, we got to step outside of our culture to deal with others that always haven't been beneficial to our group. What can we do about
that? True. Now, if we're talking about
the 401ks and all that other stuff, you know, everything you're speaking about, you mean to tell me that you're lacking in this area as a black community? Because everything you speak about, I'm thinking about, it's the other cultures that dominate this process.
Why is that?
Well, there's a couple factors. There's a couple factors why we're not involved strongly in this area, and we have to rely on other cultures for life insurance, retirement, credit cards, cars, any other insurance. So therefore, we have the agents, we have the local agents or what have you. But when you talk about really doing business, we really take our money outside the community and making them rich again, five times over. I think that's a historical aspect attached to it. I think it's an institutionalized economic racism attached to it.
And it's lack of education on it, too.
Yeah, go ahead, huh?
There's lack of education on it, too. They can be as racist and not caring about us at all, but they still have a requirement to keep up their end of the bargain. But again, if that's the case, then you invest in a black bank in your black community. It also starts, part of it is, it starts with our young people. If we get our young people and educate them on who they are, one, and what they need to do for themselves, and the same conversation that you're having with me and I'm having with you, I have these conversations with my children, too. I've had it for a long time. But that's me because I've been in this business forever. But, well, 20 years, but you know. But
forever?
It feels like forever. You tried doing it for 20 years.
I've been doing stuff for 35 years.
Well, listen. Don't start with that ruckus stuff. Stop.
Are you in the house? Are you?
I am.
ladies and gentlemen, even though I'm a Rutgers graduate, she's a Rutgers graduate, but she came way after I graduated. You know, I'm one.
I still think my dad was. You had my dad. I'm almost sure that you came across him. I know you did. You had to. There's no way for you to be at Rutgers those years and not come across either Van Sertima or my dad.
Tell your audience who your dad is.
Oh, my dad was Professor Dr. Yusef Ali, you know, very close friends with Dr. Ivan Van Sertima. He did a book with him called The Golden Age of the Moors. He's just a jazz musician who played with everybody and traveled the world and got an education, wasn't supposed to make it on from the streets of Baltimore, and just, you know, he was phenomenal. I said I have to do a book for him, about him, one of these days when I have time, maybe when I retire.
By himself, did he do a book what? Solo?
Who, my dad? No.
Yes.
He did albums. He did music, but not the book. He did that with Dr. Ivan Van Sertima.
Okay.
Yeah. But
so
he, like,
did,
my dad,
and
here's a prime example.
That this sister is a product of the struggle that continues throughout these decades. And her children, our grandchildren and great grandchildren of the struggle that is still going on today. So listen to her. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, but here's the difference with me. I don't really look at things are real out here, but for me, and the way I've raised my daughters, it's a struggle out there, but you don't have to deal with it. You have to face it because you're a black woman, but I never look for acceptance.
And a black man is rough being a black man in America.
Oh, it's even harder. It's even harder.
That's right.
See, we, us black women, we're changing the subject for a second. We've been forced to stand strong, keep our heads up regardless. So we're thriving. You know, we're good. We know I don't look for acceptance from anybody. You're gonna respect me. I'm going to make sure that you have a reason to respect me, regardless of what's going on. I everybody knows who I am. I have people of all nationalities that I'm cool with, but they know I am a proud black woman. I will listen. I love my brothers. Oh my goodness. Yes. I will represent you proudly. But we have a lot of work to do. We do. But my daughters, they keep their heads up. You know, they know the importance of making sure that they put everything in line. People look at my daughters and like, I can't believe those are your daughters, because I was raised in the projects. I grew up in the projects, and I knew that I wanted better. So my children have no idea of that kind of life, and I'm sure a lot of listeners and people are the same way. We made sure we bust our behinds to make sure that that thing that's going on and that has always been going on does not attach itself to our children. And that's the big thing for me. And I every single day, I live that. Not just my kids, your child. If I see your kid, everybody. I'm everybody's mother.
Well, let me ask you this.
What?
You know, people got a different name for the black community now. You know, but
I don't even like the word. I don't even like black community. I don't even like that.
Okay. Our community. Mm-hmm. You know, you got different terms and labels. But what's wrong with living around our folks? Every time we get 50 Cent, two quarters rubbed together, the first thing we want to do is move out
go
of
to
our
store.
Community
nope.
And mm-hmm. live in a diverse community.
Because it's world.
I grew up in an all African American community. I got the real estate agency were African American. The pharmacist was African American. The store owner was African American. The grocery store, and that's another thing. I got to reach out to those black farmers and see how can we get these.
Hey, I'm a Jersey girl. I'm a Jersey girl, so I know a lot of those.
Because there's no more black supermarkets. That's dead. If I'm wrong, somebody correct me. You know, I've been from here to the West Coast and back. But all I'm saying is that it's an old term that hasn't been used. It's been substituted by another term. I forgot what that term is. The black nationalist, you know, the black, and which means pan-Africanism, which means keeping our financial resources within our communities. Everybody talk about, oh, they want to start businesses, they want to do this, they want to do that. But if we don't have the financial foundations, and start, like you said in the beginning of the show, and it starts in the home, we are doomed. We are doomed.
Pretty much.
And you find out, and I don't care what you feel about Minister Louis Farrakhan. I know people have certain feelings about that, about him, but he said something ironic one morning. How can you continue to go to a system, be a part of a system that don't have respect for you? And every time we need something, every time we want something, we want to run to the city hall, the state house, or the White House for help. And to me, it's almost like trying to get approval from the modern day master. And we got a whole lot of black masters. We have a question.
That's what I was getting ready to say. You can't. You have to do what you have to do. You have to get a license. You have to get when it comes to insurance, you have to get an insurance license. You have to go through the state to do that. So again, it's not about, for me, it's not about looking for acceptance. It's about using what's out there, getting my opportunity, getting my respect. I'm not trying to kiss nobody's tail. I'm trying to bust my butt and do what I need to do I live in America.
But we must other people instead of ourselves. We have a comment or a question. Hold on, Ms. Hodges. Somebody want to talk to you. You're on the air, 4953. Welcome to Black Girls on America.
Hey, what's up? No, blacks do those things because they're United States citizens. That's what they expect to receive those things that's available.
Exactly. You have to go through certain protocols to get, I mean, regardless, that's like saying I'm not going to pay my taxes because I'm paying the white man. You can't do that. You have to do what you need to do. I mean, unless you're Donald Trump, you don't have to pay taxes then, but that's another show.
Well, Donald Trump paid taxes also, who I supported, by the way. People talking about his corporation. His company. Corporations have tax deductions, and they don't pay. By the way, his new tax reform will allow married couples filing jointly an extra $12,000 for a total of $24,000. Deducted from their gross income taxes. That there is a good thing. Mm-hmm. Sure, you can use another $12,000 to do the things that you're pursuing to do. But I want to make mention of something. You know, I'm a strong supporter of school choice. And you know, Bessie DeVos was speaking at commencement at the Bethune College, which is a historical black college. And I think it was just totally, totally disrespectful the way those students act that they when she was trying to.
Why you feel that way? They have every right to express. Let me tell you something.
I said it was totally.
Hold up. I listen
to
y'all. Let me respond.
Well, I haven't even got done.
Now, let me tell you something.
I haven't even gotten my point out.
That's why I respect young people. You got to remember, we was young ones. That's why I respect young people. They got that energy, and they will let you know the honest feelings about what's going on. And
Wait, let's finish this point. They did that on that day, but come Monday, they got to go seek a job from white folks. And here's another thing. You had in the auditorium that wanted to hear what she had to say. Now you had at Harvard or Yale where they done a protest with Spence, but it was a quiet protest. Some of the students just happened and got up and left out of the auditorium. But you don't disrupt the whole auditorium because you got students there that want to hear what it is that she has to say, and particularly along the lines of school choice. No one can say that. In the urban areas, you don't need school choice. Looking at the dismal performance of what's coming out of the present system. When these students go to the Bethunes where you only have a 32% graduation rate, you only have 5% of the alumni that give back to the college, well, that's who they should be complaining about, I think, because that is totally ridiculous. And it's not the students' fault. It's where they are coming from. They locked down in a system that is totally, totally flawed. Not totally flawed, but it has.
The schools now do what they're allowed to do. My daughter goes to a historically black college. She goes to Bowie State. They know all that. Oh, she's grown. You can't ask any questions. You must be out of your mind. You know how much money I pay? No, I have questions. I have concerns. If there's anything, we have to get involved. And it is. It's not. Totally on the school, needs to be overhauled.
That they come out of. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of problems. A whole lot. We know, and we would disagree a whole lot. And I just don't want to disagree with you a lot tonight. I want to listen.
And to tell black parents they don't have a right to put their child where they think is the best for them. And they should receive full vouchers to do so. Some parents want to put their child in another traditional public school because it is offering something that the present one that they're locked in, they don't get what they want. And just think about this. You had two cases of mention. You had a black mother in Connecticut, and you had a black mother in Ohio. And they enrolled their children in the adjacent school district, and one of them is doing 5 years for doing that, 5 years in prison, and the other one is pending going to jail because they chose to put their child in those districts, but the district requires you to pay when you do that. That's why if she had had vouchers, the money that would have been allowed in the school district where she wanted to come out of could have followed her child to whatever school that she wanted to go to. And that's why I like Trump's proposal on school
reform. Like I said, we can disagree. We can agree to disagree. There, I mean, absolutely, you should be able to put your child wherever you want. But if that's the case, then
why would you not want a
it would be over. It would be
choice?
Huh?
Why would you not want a parent to have choice when blacks when
no,
they're polled?
No, I said they should.
I said
they should. But if you look at it like this, again, I don't live in Baltimore City. I live outside of Baltimore. Mm-hmm. But if that's there's certain schools here where if that's the case, all of the kids will be in one school, and you won't get quality teachers. You won't. There's good and bad and everything. But
well,
again, it's about choice. You should have that choice. You
right,
should
you
have the
choice.
Choice.
And this thing about people saying, "Well, if you allow parents to do that, they would take their kid out, and all you have left is the kids." Well, I'm not leaving my child in that situation. I didn't send my child to a historical black college. They go to LSU, and that tuition I pay out of my pocket every year. Plus, he can get scholarships, but only because they have facilities there that are extraordinary when it comes down to engineering.
Okay. Not everybody has that choice, though. Not everybody can do that.
Well, you're right, but those who do have a choice should be allowed to utilize their choice unhampered. But no, there was I just wanted to make comments on that. You may mention about financing. There's new things that's coming on the horizon, like these cryptocurrencies, like Bitcoin. You know, several years ago, Bitcoin opened up at 12 cents a share. Now it's trading over $2,000 a share. So look at the type of wealth that you could have produced by putting a minuscule amount of money in a 12 cents a share of Bitcoin and be able to transact it now at over $2,000 a share.
That's what I'm talking about. You did research, right, to find this information out, right?
Absolutely.
That's the key, research. That's what we're talking about. Don't just let somebody tell you what you should and shouldn't do. You research to find out if that's what's best for you and your family. And don't wait until the last minute because we have a tendency to wait until our backs are against the wall to start thinking instead of thinking while we're walking through the grass. We have to prepare better. We have to the second that, I'm pregnant, you need to start thinking about 18 years, 5 years, 2 years, preschool. We have to start thinking about that stuff early on.
You have to start preparing for higher education as early as possible. Exactly, right.
Not just higher. And, I mean, because nowadays you got to be careful what preschool you put your child in. You know, you have to be prepared.
And another thing, you have to have your child independently assessed, evaluated, to see exactly where they are, where they're lacking. You cannot go by what that public school tell you because their benefit is biased. They need your child to sit in that chair. And whether they learn or not, there's no criteria. So if you just let them tell you how the child is doing, then, you know, the onus is going to be on you. And the child is going to be neglected sometime in the future. So hopefully this new Secretary of Education will move forward on school choice. I don't have no skin in the game. I took care of mine. But, you know, you kind of feel sorry for these students who don't have any, you know, they don't have any say-so. They're only expecting and hoping that what they do receive is going to do them good. In many cases, we see where they fall short.
Yeah.
Okay,
good
I can see listen. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Well.
Good point.
I see, again, what I was trying to convey is that, yes, school choice is fine, but let's start building schools that will benefit our children instead of our. You want to know the number one reason is the what? The number one reason why families move out of our communities? Education. And not so much the crime, and not so much.
I was going to say, you think that?
It's been documented. That is, you can look at the statistic. The number one reason why families move out of our communities is education. And if we, as a people, again, got to go to the economics and the financial, all the stuff. My man was talking about the investment. You see, that knowledge, that caller had, if that could be instituted in our communities, if that could be taught in our community to our residents, we got so much knowledge, but it's benefiting other cultures that are benefiting our neighborhoods, our communities. And again, like I said 45 minutes ago, that first thing we want to do when we get a position, when we get a promotion, or whatever, we want to move out instead of staying put and helping participate. Because when a person move out, they're taking their resources, they're taking their financial resources, and one better yet, they're taking two things: a positive image and different things they want that they can share with their neighbors. All that is gone.
That is a point, but it's also a choice. I grew up in Atlantic City, New Jersey. There was no way that I was raising my daughters in that environment because the people in office were not worried about the city and the safety and the quality of lives in the city. They were worried about their pockets and pleasing Donald Trump and all the other casino owners. So, with that being said, when my oldest daughter was ready to go to kindergarten, I knew it was time for me to make some decisions, and I don't regret it at all. I go home all the time, and I'm in corporate America, I'm all that, but at the same time, you got to watch what you say. You got to watch what you do. My children aren't like that. My children, I made sure that they were always in. The reason why I wanted my children in diverse schools is because this world is diverse, and I pray that they take advantage of all the places in the world to see it all.
But so what had diversity benefited the our culture? How had diversity benefit us?
Well, you can look at both sides. How did it benefit us? It benefited us to show us things that were not discussed in our household, number one. But we have to learn balance. Just because you learn that don't mean you become 100% that. You still have to be you. You still have to do what's best for your community. You know me. You know how I express myself. And I am very proud of who I am. But, again, I am very protective of my cubs. I am very protective of my queens in training. So I am going to do everything. And I'm in risk management. So I'm going to do everything that I can to prevent harm from happening to them in the best way that I can. Do we all get it right? No, we don't always get it right. But we try to do the best that we can for our families. And, again, it's about research and education. We keep saying that. It's about research and education. Guys, you remember a time where everybody was flying down to Atlanta because it was the black Mecca? You know, everybody was going to Atlanta. And we just, we don't have that mindset. Everybody's just trying to make it and trying to do the best that they can. But sometimes we fall short. It just doesn't work out
because
like that.
We don't have our own. Let me tell you something.
So how do we fix that?
Well, let's look at some cultures, see how they do it. Chinatown, the Hasidic Jews. Especially the Hasidic Jews from Brooklyn, New York, they have their own bus transportation. They have their own hospitals because they keep their schools, their property, their own land. I mean, everything is within their community. And you don't hear about cops going up in their community shooting them down, do you? See, when you got
absolutely not.
When you have something to bring to the table, people, other cultures will respect you. And right now, every time we want to do something, we got to go to them. We got to plead with them for our benefit and growth and prosperity. No, let's start depending on us because we got a lot of these. I don't care if
we do. Do we utilize them, though? We don't. We don't utilize them. Again.
And that's the reason for Black Urban America Radio. So we can start getting people to utilize what you spoke of a word investment earlier. We got to start investing ourselves.
The key to it is, I don't crave for acceptance. I just do. I'm going to always be me. And there's a lot of people like that. Again, and I jumped for a second.
And, but that's a slave mentality.
In every community.
From them.
I'm sure in every community there's a black-owned bank.
It's only done to
how many of us have a bank account with them? Hmm?
It's only 32 black-owned banks in the United States of America.
Well, there's quite a few here in the Baltimore area.
Yeah, there's only one down here in Atlanta.
Hmm.
Well.
Wow.
I got to start in the show, but let me tell you something, Sister Aisha. I am going to be calling you within the next week or 2 weeks. I want to discuss something with you, okay?
All right.
All right.
It was a pleasure.
Thank
you for your time.
Maybe we can make this a monthly thing. Well, we could discuss that. But I enjoyed you. And I think we're going to get a lot of downloads this week because it's going to be at least between 5,000 or 10,000 people listening to your theory, Sister Aisha, okay?
And I will say this. If anybody has any questions that they wanted to ask or they're curious, you can call me at my office. The number is 410-496-8526. Call me. Like I said, I don't care about your credit card. I just want to give you the education.
Okay. How about your email address? A lot of people like to do email now.
Oh, that is long. my email is...
Don't tell me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Call me.
Call me. Her email address is probably 1 minute long, 2 minutes long.
It is. We'll run over time. 410-496-8526. Yes.
I'm going to be calling within the next week or two, okay?
Will do. Have a great night, everybody.
Good night, sister. Wow, that was very, very educational. Another perspective. Thank you for the caller from 4953. And matter of fact, a different perspective. You see, we need these different perspectives. We're not a monolithic people. We all don't think the same within our culture. But it's one thing I do want to convey to all of you. have inclusion of all of our people that think differently. Like what Sister Aisha was saying all night, you know, let's agree to disagree. Yeah, it's called inclusion. You know, we need our Black Republicans. We need our Black Democrats, our Black Independents, our Black Conservatives, our Black Progressive, our Black Revolutionary. We need all of us to sit down at the, our Black Christians, our Black Buddhists, our Black Muslims, and Yoruba, and all. Just sit down, because everybody got a perspective. And we need to grab from a little bit for this and that. And let me tell you something. I keep on saying this, but Sister Aisha disagree with me. I don't care. We need our own. We need our own. In everything, from education to business to, you name it, we need our own. Well, that's it for tonight. Tune in on Saturday night for Private Provocative Thought with Carl Steve. And I thank everyone for listening to the show. Good night.